Podcast. Again, I am your host, Corey Kinnon, with your co-host, Dalton Miller. Dalton and I, it's been about a week. I was in Chicago for Labor Day / my anniversary, and then Dalton came down with a little bit of food poisoning.
Have no idea what that actually was, because it wasn't like full-on food poisoning, because I actually did have that about 6 months back or a little bit longer. But anyways, that was horrific. That was like, I think I'm going to die type of stuff there. This was more just like I felt like a beached whale. And so what I think it was actually was we had some bell peppers and we didn't cook them. We usually do cook them. I also didn't wash them. So maybe I just had a little bit of a bad reaction to those bell peppers. And, you know, we got over it in about a day and a half, you know, 2 days. Took a little while to digest everything, which felt weird because I'm very like regimented in everything that I eat and drink and everything. Mm-hmm. So like I'm very much like in tune with my gut microbiome is the big thing now. But I'm usually locked in there and it felt weird not being locked in there for a couple of days, but we're back. We're ready to go. We were good for college football. We were good for the NFL week one. And it was a fun week of college football this week, wasn't it?
It was. And I'm very excited to like talk about, I think we're finally, Dalton and I finally figured out again, for those of you who don't know, Dalton lives in Portugal. So like figuring out a recording schedule has been, and again, I have two very young children. My son is 2 and my daughter is 10 months old. So like weekends, and I cover the Browns. So like weekends are like no good. I have no time throughout the day. So it's been tough, but I think we figured it out now that we're going to have a consistent way to knock out 4 episodes a week. And I'm very excited about that now that we're through the Labor Day weekend into the college football season. But yeah, week 2 was a good one. And I think we need to start somewhere, because when we talked about the top quarterbacks in the draft, we talked about three guys and none of them were Quinn Ewers.
We on purpose left Quinn Ewers out of the conversation because of what we had seen from him. And listen, he was the number one recruit in the nation and like one of the highest graded.
The highest recruit of all time.
Was he the highest graded?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the talent was obviously there. The talent has obviously always been there with him. But in the Steve Sarkisian offense last year, with all of those weapons at his disposal, 2 first round picks at wide receiver, somebody who I thought was a second round tight end. I think he ended up going in the second round, right?
He went fourth round.
Yeah.
He didn't test as well as we thought he was going. Oh, he tested abysmally.
Yeah. But like all of these weapons, and it just, you never saw it with Quinn Ewers. And so you wanted that leap. And we've seen this leap from other guys before. We saw it from Bo Nix. We saw it from Joe Burrow, who went from anonymity to at Ohio State backing up Dwayne Haskins to going down to LSU and being like, you know, he's a day 3 guy, you know, going into his graduate year. And then
he had a flawless season,
like focused on football and had, in my opinion, the second best college football season I have ever seen. So I think what we're seeing is the evolution of being able to actually run Steve Sarkisian's offense the way that Sark wants it. And the athletic ability, arm angles, things like that, to work that quick game without having everything figured out in his lower half.
Yeah. Side note, I need to know who your top ever college season was. You said second best was Joe Burrow. I got to know who number one is then.
Oh, number one was Cam Newton.
Oh, Cam Newton. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Number one was Cam Newton. And I'm a little bit young for the Vince Young year, but the Vince Young year was I remember watching it as a smaller child, and that was insane as well.
Yeah. 2017 Baker's up there too. I didn't know if that's where you were going to go.
Baker was great. Yeah. Baker was great. But Cam Newton was, I mean, he was taking truck drivers to a natty. It was.
Gene Chizik has Cam Newton to thank for any amount of his TV analysis career, any job that he got after that, because he has fallen flat on his face without Cam Newton every step of the way. Back to Quinn Ewers though. Yeah. I mean, it was a really the best he's probably looked at a Texas Longhorn offense. And I think that says something when he's beat Alabama and when he took his team to the national, like the college football playoffs, and was honestly one drive away from the national championship. I think that says something that this was his best game when he has gone that far. I still have, I charted it today. I still have reservations. Again, he did some things really well. I thought he maneuvered the pocket really well. And like that touchdown over the middle where he found his tight end on the deep ball in the end zone was like, he stepped up in that pocket and he delivered a strike like that. That's what you want to see.
Yeah.
How, and in this quarterback class, like that could very well be good enough. If he can do that consistently in this class and win the SEC in Texas's first year in the SEC, which I think they've got a pretty strong case to do so. Go back to the college football playoffs and maybe even further. That's probably good enough in this class for NFL teams to say this guy's a winner. They took J.J. McCarthy in the first round doing the same thing. And J.J. McCarthy down the stretch threw 15 passes a game. But we can go back to that Steve Sarkisian offense, an offense that Mac Jones, again, performed flawlessly in. And this is where I want to praise Quinn, because what Mac Jones did so well in that offense that Quinn didn't do last year is like, Mac was on schedule, on time, to AT.
All the time.
All the time. Pre-snap, post-snap, he knew what he was doing with the football. He was on, I mean, it helps when you're throwing to Jalen Waddle, right? That helps. And did it Devontae Smith. Like,
That surely
helps, right? But like, there wasn't a time where like, oh, Mac is late on this football. He was like pre-snap, post-snap. He had that offense digested. He could probably give it to you in a second language. He could like, on a whiteboard, he could tell you exactly what was happening against cover four, cover three. You know, if they mugged, whatever, he knew where he was going with the football, and he did it on time and he did it flawlessly. Again, we talked like he almost broke Joe Burrow's record a year later. Like that's just how good he was in that offense. Mm-hmm. Quinn hitched. Quinn was late. Quinn, all these sorts of things. And that's where I want to praise him in this game, is that he was on time. He wasn't late. He didn't hesitate. I think that's a great place to start with this conversation on Quinn Ewers, is like, this is what Steve needs from his quarterback, and Quinn gave it to him, and he beat the defending national championship. And again, we can talk about how good Michigan is going to be this year and how many games they might lose this year, but they beat the defending national championship in the Big House.
Yeah. And handily. And we'll get to the rest of that game after we are finished talking about Quinn. But I think when I watched it, I was really impressed with how comfortable he was working outside of structure as well. Because you always saw the arm talent, but like the throw across his body that was eventually called back. A hold was outrageous. I mean, that's the type of arm talent that you're looking for in a top pick in the NFL draft. And that's what you just don't really get in this class. You don't get that with Sanders. You definitely don't get that with Beck. And so if Ewers is able to do the Mac Jones stuff in this Steve Sarkisian offense, even to 80% of what Mac Jones was able to do, because I don't expect Ewers as the playmaker that he is to be on schedule all of the time. It's very much like some of these guys that we have at the NFL level still. You're Josh Allen's, your Lamar Jackson's, Kyler Murray's, who they have that playmaking itch. And sometimes that itch, it needs scratched more than you need to hit the hitch. I mean, it's something that we talked about with Caleb Williams all of the time. Can he work on schedule? Can he take the easy completion when it is given to him pre-snap, which is something that Caleb Williams didn't do a very good job of last year. And so for me, when I see Ewers, I just want to see that type of consistency with doing the on-schedule stuff, and then also showing under pressure against a Wink Martindale defense. And Wink didn't blitz a ton, but they were still able to get pressure, and he was able to navigate that pressure. Now, what I did see as well were a couple of misses that I think are wholly due because his lower body is a wreck, and his lower body is a wreck because that's what we talk about all the time. Lower bodies in college football are just absolutely horrendous for the most part. And there was a little bit of skittishness when there was free rushers, and that's just part of being young. And, you know, some guys have it. We saw it, Sunday night, or it was Sunday night for me, but Sunday midday for you guys, when Dak Prescott was pressured and there was a free rusher and he lofted a ball up on a double China 7 route to Brandon Cooks. And it was the perfect kind of play under pressure. And that's just something you're not going to get from a college junior
I completely agree. I want to switch to maybe.
Can we do a daft on draft real quick?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Daft or draft. Yeah. So this is a new segment.
Daft or draft.
Yeah. So this is a new segment that we're going to start doing. It's kind of like true or false, right? Like,
yeah,
we're going to pose an overarching, maybe not even hot take is the question, but overarching question. And then we have to decide daft or draft, true or false. Like, yes, I'm going to pound the table and I'm going to draft that idea, or like, that's daft. Like, that's silly. That's not serious. So we saw
Dame Brugler had Quinn Ewers in his top 25 preseason. Mm-hmm. We know that the NFL likes Quinn Ewers, no matter what they saw last year. Is he QB1 right now after that game because of the physical tools, because of the projection of what he could do in this Steve Sarkisian offense the rest of the year with less talent, still amazing talent, but less talent than last year? Has he right now through two games shown enough growth to be considered QB1 in this class?
Ooh, I mean, Weigman didn't perform in a big game.
Yeah.
Shedeur Sanders didn't perform against a recovering Big Ten team. The NFL, this is what listeners need to know. One, the NFL is really bad at drafting. And two, the NFL is really good at reactionary drafting.
Oh, yeah.
So like, it wouldn't shock me. Oh, man.
Here's the thing. I'm going to say draft. I'm going to say it because I think the NFL has wholeheartedly shifted their focus from guys who they think can be pretty good to guys who they're going to bet on can be great. And I think guys like Bryce Young, guys like Mac Jones, those are the type of guys who are going to start going later in drafts. For the guy who is 6'4", 240 pounds, like Anthony Richardson, if that all happens again today, CJ Stroud should have still been the first pick.
Right.
But it's probably going to be Anthony Richardson and him battling it out for that spot, because I think you're going to keep looking for the Josh Allens, because especially if you're an AFC team, you have to go against Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen and Justin and all of these absolute freaks of nature. And you're not going to do that with Carson Beck as a top 15 quarterback. It's just not, it's not worth your time.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I mean, we hit a point after the Josh Allen pick where the NFL swung completely to, if you don't have tools, we're not taking you early. And that ended up with some really bad quarterbacks being taken really early. But I think that pendulum kind of swung back in 2022 a little bit when everybody hyped up Malik Willis and Desmond Ridder because, like, well, these guys at least have tools. They can run. They can throw, even though both of their college tapes were awful. Their pre-snap, post-snap process was awful. And Kenny Pickett went the first round as the first quarterback. I mean, that's a historic. That's probably the worst quarterback.
Yeah, it was a terrible draft.
So maybe that one's not a great example. But, I mean, maybe we're finding the middle of the road. And it's not like Quinn is not doing things in structure, and he's still, I think I will draft it as well, but it's not like Carson Beck doesn't have a really strong resume of really consistent quarterback play and a good arm. So that's where I'm like, over Shedeur at this point. Yes. That Nebraska game. I mean, that late hitch inside his own 10 yard line is like a massive red flag. No, you don't do that. And his offensive line's not going to get any better, and he's going to get more skittish, and that's going to be on tape. Like, that's where I'm at with Shedeur right now. Like, he looked good against an FCS team.
And we can bring this up with Shedeur too. The very Deion-esque comments after the game about his offense.
He's got blocking form. Yeah, that's not good stuff.
No. And that's not going to, you definitely don't say that about your offensive line, because I mean, they might not be very good, but they're trying their best right now, and they might not try their best for very much longer.
Yeah.
And I understand that it's the Sanders way of kind of dealing with this stuff. They are honest to a fault, we'll say, when it comes to these things. And I just don't think at the quarterback position that's something that teams are going to like at all. You can be that way as a corner. You can be that way as a wide receiver. You can't be that way as a quarterback. Not in the NFL. Not now. Not right now. Not still while while these guys are the owners of these football teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'm hesitant to say draft on that, but I think I will.
I love it. I love
hesitantly.
It.
Hesitantly.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, again, and the NFL like the is just so reactionary.
It's a caveat that we don't love this class either.
And it's week two. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Because I really do like to take in the full body of work. And, you know, I'll post a mid-season article where I've charted the first half of all these quarterbacks. And I need a body of work to work with, and I don't have it yet. So, like, I hate being put in that cage, but that's what makes a podcast great, I guess.
Exactly.
Right. So I'll say draft for now. But I have some hesitations even with this Michigan game. Like, I don't think he played a perfect game by any means.
No,
I think
there were, but he didn't need to either. And that's another thing that we need to talk about.
Yeah.
It's going to be really easy for him if they are able to absolutely dominate the line of scrimmage the way that they did in this. I mean, he didn't need to throw the ball.
No,
he didn't need to throw the ball. They could have ran the ball right down Michigan's throat all game long. That offensive line bullied Michigan's defensive front.
That's a defensive front that has two potential first round picks on it as well. That has one potential top five player on it as well. So, like, that's Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant are very good football players, and they got pushed around. What drives me crazy about Ewers still, though, and I texted you about this off the air, is like, I see a quarterback that was just taken that I put a third round grade on, and he went in the top 15. And he is starting week one, started week one and had an absolutely horrendous week one and threw probably four or five interceptable balls. I think he ended up with two interceptions, but he threw probably four or five that should have been picked off. And that's Bo Nix, man. Like, I think, again, the NFL is reactionary. A lot of draft Knicks are reactionary to the point of, like, they consume highlights on Twitter, right? Like, and that's not going after draft Knicks, but like, that's just like, I'm so laser focused on, I want to see the whole body of work. And when you look at Bo Nix's tape from last year at Oregon, like, he went off the charts statistically, but he's throwing screens. He's throwing sticks. He's throwing nine routes to Troy Franklin. That's really it. Like, that's it. It's every once in a while he'll find a backside dig. But again, with Bo Nix, when he does have to move his eyes backside, like, his lower half got really skittish. Bo Nix hates throwing from a platform for, like, it's still happening at the NFL level. It happened in the preseason, even though he's completing passes against shells, like, and got a lot of hype, but he never sets his feet. He's always throwing off of a bad platform. And again, at Oregon, he wasn't asked to do a lot. Comes into the NFL, he hasn't shown a lot in the preseason, and people are like, oh, this guy's good. The moment he's hit with a regular season defense that's disguising, that's rotating, that's throwing different looks at him, he looks lost. And I think I have those same concerns about Quinn, because that Sarkisian offense is giving him a ton of pre-snap eye candy. They're telling him a whole lot about what he's going to see after he snaps the football. He's throwing a lot of screens, throwing a lot of stick. Mm-hmm. He's throwing a lot of high-low where he's reading one man. He's reading the boundary corner, right? And even on two of those high-lows, he missed the throws to the corner. Like, he took the high and he missed them. He missed him. So, like, and then he had a deep ball that he missed as well within structure. And so, like, there's still some things that are driving me crazy. And I think not having a base is key among that. And kind of being frantic when he doesn't have that pre-snap look that he thinks he has. Mm-hmm. I saw it in this game too. Like, his lower half gets a little his feet speed up. And I don't love that. And so, again, this is a great game, probably his best game ever, but there are still things I'm like, I need to see it consistently. And he's got an SEC schedule. So, yeah, I think that's where I sit with Quinn. I'm not ready to, like, make that jump that he's my QB1, but I do think the NFL is reactionary enough that I think they probably would go.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have effectively taken up about 20 minutes talking only about Quinn Ewers. We should probably get to the next segment now.
Yeah. So, again, this new content schedule. Tuesdays are really the first day we can put out episodes. So Tuesday through Friday is what we're shooting for. So first day of the week, let's recap that week's two schedule. Let's recap what happened over the weekend in terms of the draft world, in terms of the college football world. And what more fun way to do that? I loved the segment growing up on College Game Day where they would do helmet stickers on Monday, they would do helmet stickers of, you know, this player gets a sticker for doing this. And I think that's such a unique way to highlight NFL draft prospects specifically, because this is a draft podcast. So guys who are juniors, upperclassmen and above, three sophomores and above, to kind of put their name out there for listeners and for us to like keep tabs on. And for me starting this, like this guy got a helmet sticker last week because he rushed for over 300 yards and four touchdowns against Georgia Southern. And Ashton Janty, the Boise State running back. But then,
can I just bring up, like, I when I went back and I watched that game, I've never seen somebody who was the smallest guy on the field also look like the biggest guy on the field. And that's what it was like when he played Georgia Southern. He was just, he was the 5'7" guy who was still somehow bigger than everybody else.
The muscle hamster reincarnate. Yeah, he's. Mm-hmm. But then, like, we said, okay, that's great. Like, Dane Brugler's running back one, my running back one coming into the season. I thought that, like, he could have got. Soft asterisk here. He could have gone to Alabama if he wanted to this offseason, and he stayed at Boise State. And then he goes and they play the defending, I guess, Pac-12 runner up, but a team that was highly successful last year, a team that many think are going to be really good again this year. And he did it again. Like, he put that Boise State offense on their Boise State's quarterback is not very good. And that might be being really kind. And he put that offense on his back again against a P4 team, against a really good Oregon football team. And he's proving, like, I have a resume. Like, I don't just beat up on Mountain West teams. I don't beat up on Sunbelt non-conference opponents. Like, he just beat up on Oregon. That can buy any player they want because Phil Knight's wallets are is endless. Like, there's no bottom to it.
Yeah. No. Listen, it was a fun one. I watched it. He is such a fun player. He's everything that I love in a back, and he's still not my RB1. He's still not.
Okay.
He's still. I am so hard on the Ollie Gordon train. Mm-hmm. I love the way that he moves. I think there's just a little bit more juice there overall as well. But man, I mean, we're talking about two backs who I haven't been this excited about a running back class in a while. And these are two guys at the very top of it who are incredibly exciting players. And GT is a guy who, at that size, with that contact balance, I mean, that's everything that I love in a back. I love when you're 5'8", 215 pounds, and can bounce off of guys. So that was a lot of fun to watch that game.
Yeah. So that's one helmet sticker. We got three each.
We got three each, and I'm going to stick with the same game here. Ooh. On the other side of the ball, Evan Stewart in a wide receiver class that is maybe not the best at the top. I think it's got talent, but Evan Stewart is somebody who we've just kind of been waiting for the huge breakout from him. We never got it at Texas A&M. Weigman couldn't stay healthy last year, so he didn't get great quarterback play. And he looked like the supercharged version, the supercharged and oiled up version of what they had last year with, why can't I think of 11's name right now? Wide receiver at Oregon, got drafted in the third round. Everybody loved
Troy Franklin. Troy
Franklin. Yeah, we literally just said his name earlier and I had a brain fart. But kind of in that Troy Franklin role a little bit, but Evan Stewart is somebody who, I mean,
he's not stiff as a board.
No, he's not stiff as a board.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he moves incredibly well, incredibly efficiently. And he also has that type of burst that you see that's like, that guy's going to beat you downfield. And he just flat out beat the Boise State defenders down the field. And he gives a little bit after the catch. He didn't show as much in this game, but he's somebody who could end up being that like late round one guy who we were looking at, like with Adonai Mitchell this year, with Xavier Worthy, those types of guys. And I think that he is a really, really dangerous player if he puts it all together for 13 weeks this year.
Yeah, absolutely. We had that wide receiver episode, and the play strength thing is still going to be there for him. But like, if nobody's getting a hand on him, then like,
That burst is fun.
For sure. Next, we have one from the same game again, except different teams. So let's go to the Bowling Green Penn State game. I'll let you go first with the power four guy. That's probably the more of the household name at this point.
How big is Tyler Warren? Because he's listed at like 6'6", 260, and for some reason It might be the collar. He looks even bigger than that. Unfortunately, he doesn't quite block like he's a 270-pound tight end. It's just kind of okay, but I'm paying you. I'm drafting you to catch passes and block a little bit, and that's something that he can do really well. For a 260-pound human being, he moves pretty well. Now, he's not the most fluid guy in the world. He is a little bit not as explosive as Gronk either, but I want to say, like, he's shifty in the way that Gronk was shifty. Mm-hmm. And I think when I watch him play, he just looks like one of those guys who you kind of always hoped Cade Stover might end up being, just a big, strong dude who works over the middle of the field. But Warren is somebody who can do a little bit more, and there wasn't always difficult against Bowling Green because Penn State did a lot of overloading their zones, and he kind of skirted out on these little wheel routes and found the sideline. But he's a big physical runner who can also make you miss if you go low on him. And so for me, you know, the game that he had against a team who Penn State should boat race, they did not, but he came up big. I think he ended up having like 147 yards and a touchdown in this game, 146 yards and a touchdown in that game. And I think that he is obviously one of the better tight ends in this class overall as well.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. He's Penn State. It's like Freiermuth was 6'5", 260. Like they breed these guys.
They do. Well, and that's that like farmer strength that Pennsylvania, because they get a lot of those guys from Ohio and Pennsylvania and out there in the sticks. And that's where they kind of pick a lot of these guys up. Actually, Penn State does a lot of good recruiting in New Jersey as well. So yeah. I don't know exactly where he's from, but I would assume it is probably one of those three or four states. Add New York in there.
Yeah, Theo Johnson, 6'6", 260 as well. Like, yeah, they're
massive dudes, and he'll test out of this world, because that's all Penn State does.
Yep, they create superheroes when they get in the building. It's ridiculous. So I want to talk about the tight end on the other side of the ball, and this is like a bone that I want to pick. And I know, like, summer scouting is predominantly upperclassmen focused. You don't focus a lot on unknown three juniors, like true juniors, because, like, there's a solid chance they're coming back and playing another year college football. Why would you use your summertime to kind of go over those guys? But I got to talk about Harold Fannin Jr. And I watched his sophomore year tape last year at Bowling Green. And I was like, this guy is unbelievable. And then it went to June and nobody talked about him. It went to July and nobody talked about him. It went to August and nobody talked about this guy. And, like, I've got videos on my, like, two different minute and a half videos on my Twitter timeline of, like, a minute and a half of this guy just blocking, and then a minute and a half of this guy just making plays with the football in his hands. Like, he's only listed, I think, 6'4", 240. So, like, he's in reality probably 6'3", 230, right? Like, he's probably not the biggest tight end in the world. But, like, if you go back and watch some of the games, like, they played Minnesota in their bowl game. They played another Power 5 team early in the season. And you watch the way he's throwing his weight around. They played Western Michigan, and Western Michigan had their defensive end drafted in the second round by the Dallas Cowboys in Marshawn Freeland.
And he played pretty well.
And he played pretty well. You can go back and watch some reps where he is getting into Nealon's chest, and he is anchoring this dude out one-on-one last year. Like, he knows how to throw his weight around. I don't know how this guy didn't get recruited to transfer up. Like, I don't know, because in my opinion, he is one of the best tight ends in the nation. And he did it for his team against a team that could be a sleeper pick to win the Big Ten if this new offensive coordinator pans out. And if Drew Aller continues to have some sort of linear growth, which he's kind of had, Bowling Green was a little bit more on the rough side. But
yeah,
Penn State could beat some good teams. And Harold Fannin went out and caught 11 passes, 137 yards and a touchdown. And he did it in ways where he was isolated against linebackers and safeties. And as we're talking about Penn State, like, these are not linebackers and safeties. These are top tier athletes. Like, these are NFL like tier athletes that he's beating one-on-one. I'm not sure there's a significant hole in his game other than he plays at the G5 level, and his body type is going to be a red flag. But, like, I think this guy has the skill set of a David Njoku, the ability to just, like, do things with the football in his hands. Even if he's catching little balls in the flat, that he's going to run through tackles because he's got a dense lower half. He's going to make plays up the seam. He's going to bring balls down in traffic. Like, I think this guy's tremendous.
And he is a tight end at a G5 school.
At Bowling Green.
And he's an underclassman, so he's going back to school most likely.
Probably, or transferring up. Yeah.
A lot of tight ends just do not declare early. It's just a position where it just doesn't happen very often. But I'm glad that you have a love for your small school tight end, because small school tight ends are fantastic.
He's unbelievable. Like, he could have transferred to a P5. Like, I don't know if he just doesn't have an agent yet. Like, he's not represented in the NIL market, or like nobody's watching Bowling Green football. But like, I know teams consult with PFF, and he was one of PFF's highest graded tight ends last year. Yeah. Like, how did this guy get missed? Did he not have the grades? Maybe that was something that he didn't, you know, but like, this guy's tremendous.
Mm-hmm. I think if you're good enough, grades only matter so much, right? Yeah,
that's fair.
Next guy is somebody who was much maligned from an Ohio school and is now playing for the Orangemen in Syracuse, New York. That is Kyle McCord, who has played fantastic through 2 weeks. And this game in particular this past week, I was very impressed by the not Kyle McCord looking quarterback play I was seeing from him. He's still not really an NFL talent, I will say. But if he continues to put on games like this and play with the type of efficiency that he was able to play with, I really enjoyed watching him in that game. And you're going to go out and you're going to get a game against Stanford on ESPN. And Stanford is a program that is not what they once were. Kyle McCord is going to get the opportunities to figure it out over this, the next course of, you know, 10 or 11 weeks. So I'm really interested to see how this shakes out. Because he's not going to get easy games all year. NC State, I know that they just got blown out by Tennessee, but NC State is supposed to be a very good football team. They're going to play Virginia Tech. They're going to play Miami. They're going to play Boston College, Cal. So they're going to get some good games here, and I'm really interested to see if McCord is able to show enough improvement to throw his name into the NFL ring.
Or to transfer up again.
Yeah, is he a fourth year?
That's a good question, because he's got to be a grad transfer this time around.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's 21, so there's a good chance.
There's a good chance he's a true senior right now. And then
he could be a redshirt junior. Let me see. He's been college football since 2021. He's a fourth year right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he could transfer up.
Yeah,
he could grad transfer back up, and in the NIL market, like that's a really big possibility for him.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
dude, NIL and transfers these days, it makes college football kind of hard to follow.
It does,
but it is so exciting.
It is,
to just think about all of the options that these guys have now.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It really is. We'll see if the Carrier Dome can fork out the money to keep him if he keeps us up at the end of the year. But
also, guys, a fantastic place to go and watch a football game. Because there's not a ton of people there ever, but it is a really fun little stadium.
I love it. I love it. All right. So my last one, I'm going to stick at the G5 level here. I didn't do that intentionally to have all three of mine be at the G5 level. I'm not one of those guys that's like, oh, I just root for the underdog no matter what. But that just happened this time around. But I'm going to go to Marshall. And Marshall has an unbelievably bending explosive edge rusher who is he's an NFL talent, dude. Like, I think this guy could get drafted on day two. I think that's how good he is. He's 6'4", 248 pounds. So, like, he's the ideal. Even if you're drafting him as a DPR, like, this guy can find NFL snaps early. And when you're drafting on day two, you're looking for role players. Like, I think, and it's Mike Green from Marshall. Like, this guy's dynamic, man. He's got bend out the ass. Like, I don't know another phrase for it, but like, this dude can bend the edge. He had 2 sacks this week and 7 pressures against Virginia Tech, a Virginia Tech team that people thought was going to win the ACC this year. Like, I mean, they technically still could, but I mean, they got beat by Vandy in week one. They've won this game, but he had 2 sacks, 7 pressures, 4 stop tackles in this game against Virginia Tech. Like, Mike Green is a football player. And so that's who my third helmet sticker is going to, is Marshall, edge rusher, Mike Green.
Nice. And that's somebody who I've not gotten any eyes on yet. So, I'm going to throw the Marshall tape up and, get that on the old Google Drive as well. So that'll be a fun one.
Again, I think he's probably destined for more of like a designated pass rusher rotational player, because I don't think the physical play strength is all the way there to be an early down defensive end at the NFL level, or end man of the line of scrimmage at the NFL level. But DPRs make a lot of money in the NFL, man. Mm-hmm. If you can be a DPR in the NFL, you can make some money. So
that's kind of what we've been trying to make DPRs into full-time players as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, they tried it with Yannick Ngakoue for half a decade.
Yeah. Bryce Huff this year in Philly, like, they moved on from Hassan, and he's Hassan Reddick. And then he's taken over as a full-time edge rusher. Ogbo Okoronkwo in Cleveland, like, he made a living off of like medium-sized year after year contracts, but he got a 2-year deal he's a rotational edge, but he'll still play on early downs. Like, he can make a living.
What a fun college football player he was.
Oh yeah.
I really enjoyed him. Yeah. And then the former Michigan linebacker turned edge rusher in New England, and I can't think of his name right
Joshua
now.
Uche.
Uche, that's right.
Yeah.
He would play like 150 snaps his first 3 years and have like 37 pressures.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's it. That's all we got for this episode, right?
Yeah. I think it is. Yeah. It is. So again, 4-day-a-week schedule. Again, the goal is to keep it, we're a little over 30 minutes, but to keep them at 30 minutes, keep them concise, keep them focused, but do it more consistently.
Keep them focused.
We're not very good at that part. I go on tangents. It's okay. But that is it for this episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Again, I am Corey. This is Dalton, and you'll be hearing from us very often.
American Giant makes great clothing. T-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.